Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi there, this is Martina Navratilova.
Hi, I'm Mats Wilander.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. And I am David Law. I haven't been on this show for a while. I'm normally on it most other weeks, but I'm not in Paris at the moment. Somebody who is, though, is Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport. Catherine, it has been another full day. We've had you speaking to Mats Wilander. We're going to be hearing about that later. We've had you speaking to Victoria Azarenka. She's going to be on the show. But first of all, how's it been? Weather's still all right.
It has been exhausting today for me and for the British Eurosport team, with three Brits in action, varying degrees of success, which we'll talk about in due course. But the weather has been a lot less punishing, sort of very pleasant, 23 degrees and a little bit of breeze, really. So that's a merciful relief. But it's been a busy one, let's put it that way.
It has, and it involved Andy Murray playing a tennis match and winning it. Now, on the face of things, world number one winning a tennis match, not that big a deal. However, this felt like a big deal to me. What did it feel like to you?
Yeah, it felt like a big deal, and the way he did it, and the fact that, you know, I was sat in the commentator's cafe watching bits of that. I was up there for the worst Andy Murray parts of the match, for the first and the second sets. And after the second set, lots were predicting that he would go on and lose, and predicting it pretty confidently, and the signs weren't great, the body language was all over the place, and then somehow he found something, he clicked into some kind of gear. Now, the body language didn't completely 100% improve, he didn't, you know, transform into a different person out there, but he definitely found some gears to crank through, and that's what he's been unable to do consistently recently. So I'm not saying necessarily this is the big click into form that Andy Murray is searching for. Only time will tell. We'll have to see how he fares against Kljan next, but it's significant. It's significant. Those two really solid sets were big for him, and the fact that he looked like he was having fun in that fourth set, he was trying different things. Fabrice Santoro asked him about that in the on-court interview after the match, and Murray joked and he said, yeah, I learned that from you, Fabrice, you were one of my favourite players before, and I was having fun out there, I was trying to try different things on the court. And I think that's significant, the fact that we're seeing a more confident Andy Murray, an Andy Murray that's enjoying his tennis a little more than perhaps we've seen of late. Incidentally, David, if you can hear a little bit of German in the background of this tennis podcast, it's because Boris Becker is sat next to me having a very important-looking phone call in German. So if you can overhear a bit of Germanic background noise, it is the dulcet tones of Mr. Boris Becker.
Oh, fantastic. So Andy Murray has managed to get through a win. I think that really bodes well for him making proper progress now. I mean, about midway
through... You tried to change your prediction, David,
and we're not having it. Well, midway through the third set, I did request, whether I could change my mind about him not reaching the quarterfinals, because to me, there's nothing wrong with Andy Murray's game. I mean, it's fine.
I've predicted Songa's going to reach the quarterfinals, and he's currently two sets to love down, David, so that's not looking great.
Well, that makes me feel better about putting Alexander Zverev into the semi-finals then.
Oh.
So,
You're not alone there, though. Plenty did that. I was so disappointed in him today, but probably not as disappointed as he was in himself. The first question in press was, you know, what was the story of that match? What happened out there? And he said, I played like S-H-I-T. That's what happened out there. It was a pretty entertaining response and basically tells you everything you need to know about that match and about Alex Zverev, other than the fact that Fernando Verdasco played very well. And I have to say, I thought the fact that the match was hungover from yesterday due to poor light would favour Zverev, because I thought that he was the stronger mentally. Verdasco traditionally hasn't been brilliant at putting together back-to-back good performances on consecutive days, but he was really impressive today, and Zverev was flat and all over the place and, yeah, pretty impotent really today. It was such a shame because he's promised so much from Rome.
I did sort of say that though in the preview show, didn't I, that might happen. Anyway, moving
did
on. No, I didn't.
Simon Briggs certainly didn't. Sorry, Simon.
I sort of said that he'd be in the semi-finals, but anyway. Joe Konta, very different story to Andy Murray, and yet she looked so good for a set and ended up going out in the first round to Su Wei Shui, wasn't it?
She only lost 10 points in that first set. She was awesome. I was trooping down to the flash interview spot after the first set because I thought the second set might go by so quickly. So after the 6-1 first set, which was by in a blink of an eye, I was getting calls from the producer saying we should just go down there because this could be, you know, a 15-20 minute set. And then suddenly she's in the thick of a match. Then suddenly she's in a tie break. And then suddenly she's in a third set. And then suddenly she's lost it. And look, Su Wei Shui is a smart, crafty tennis player, and she figured Joe Konta out today. She unlocked the cheat codes and she really played a great second and third set. But Joe Konta didn't have a plan B. You know, Su Wei Shui figured her out, upped her game, and Konta didn't have an answer to that. And she started to look, particularly in that third set, quite ragged around the edges. We're used to seeing her having this laser-like focus, this incredible ability to stay in the moment, stay present, as they call it, put disappointing shots and points behind them and move immediately on. And it was slightly more sort of just disappointment and frustration showing in Konta, a little more gesticulating towards the box. I'm not saying that means that we're going to return to Konta of old. I just mean that I think this defeat, as much as she plays it down in press, because I think that's just something she needs to do as a coping mechanism, I do think this one's going to hurt.
Is that Boris Becker recording the German version of the tennis podcast in the background?
If it is, then it looks like it might be highly entertaining. I have no way. I don't speak enough German to tell you what on earth is being said next to me.
But it is definitely Boris Becker, and he is definitely next to Catherine Whittaker as we record. So, you know, a bit of an added extra, all sort of like a kind of semi-guest on the show. Anyway, other matches of note that caught my eye. Nick Kyrgios had a very, very good win over Philipp Kohlschreiber today, didn't he? Straight set.
Yeah, he was great. Tricky draw. No one's talking about him because of what a rocky lead-up he's had. Suffered a little bit with injury, suffered more so with sort of, well, just personal issues. His granddad died and he found that hard to cope with, and just also the, very understandably of course, and the fact that meant that he had to return home to Australia for the funeral. Obviously it completely interrupted his clay court season and has completely affected him emotionally, so fewer people talking about him than they perhaps would have, but he was very impressive and professional today against a very tricky clay court opponent in Philipp Kohlschreiber.
And his good mate Tanasi Kokkinakis is back.
Oh, I love Kokkinakis. I love him. And I was worried that he had come back too quickly, not on the basis of any evidence, just on the basis of the fact that he definitely rushed his comeback for the Olympics last year. He so wanted to play in Rio. I don't think he was ready, and I think that ended up setting him back another 6 months or so. He had to have further surgery, but the signs were good today. Obviously a horrible draw for him to have to play Nishikori first round, but he got the first set. He was moving well. He looked so motivated. He looked so happy to be on the court. And yes, Nishikori came back and won, but I've seen enough to be confident that this is Tanasi Kokkinakis properly coming back to where he belongs on the big stage in tennis.
Hooray! I really like Tanasi Kokkinakis, and that's fantastic news. Now, not so nice news has come because of the behaviour of, I believe, a French qualifier who lost in qualifying. Is that right? Called Maxime Hamou. Am I saying that right? What has he been getting up to?
Maxime Hamou. Yes, he's been sort of. I don't know what the word for it is, David. I don't know if there's an official term for what on earth he was doing during a live interview with a colleague of mine, my counterpart, if you like, at French Eurosport, Mélie Thomas, fantastic reporter. She really is endlessly professional and good at what she does. And what she had to endure during this interview was horrifying, really, absolutely horrifying. She was leered at, she was grabbed, he attempted to kiss her, and everybody seemed to find this the most hilarious thing ever. And I think that's the most horrifying thing about it, the reaction. And look, I know I say this a lot, and it's no different point really to the one I made about Nastasi and Joe Konter and what Anne Kyotovong had to go through, so I won't labour the point, but this was a particularly extreme example of something that happens to female reporters, females in broadcasting, females everywhere, frankly, but obviously I can only speak from broadcasting experience, every single day. Now, look, I'm not saying that anything like that has happened to me, thank goodness, and I hope it never does. But variations on that theme have happened, and have happened to plenty of female reporters I know. And it's really interesting that when something, a version that extreme, happens, everyone is up in arms. You see everyone going, oh my goodness, I can't believe this has happened. And yet other female reporters go, yeah, that's awful, but that's not unexpected, that's not a surprise really. And that is the saddest thing about it, that this is happening all the time, and it takes such an awful example of it for everyone to take notice and realise this is probably something that shouldn't be happening. But alas, it's not that unusual. I'm so impressed by her response, speaking out, because I wouldn't blame her at all for wanting to just stick her head under a duvet and saying, this isn't what I want people to know me for, this isn't what I want to get headlines for, leave me alone, I don't want to talk about it. But she gave a great comment to the Huffington Post. She said, if I hadn't been live on the telly, I would have punched him. And I think that sums up her professionalism for carrying on going and her no-nonsense approach to it all. And it's not what I want to be talking about, but at least it shines a light on a prevalent issue.
It does, and I'm also very encouraged by the response of the French Tennis Federation, which has decided to remove the accreditation of this.
Absolutely, I'll second that. The response has been swift, it's been decisive, it's been impressive, and I'm really pleased to be able to say that.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, happier news. Victoria Azarenka, as I'm sure many of you know, is returning to the sport. She's going to be back at Wimbledon. I think she's playing in Mallorca shortly before that. And she's actually been at Roland Garros in Paris. And Catherine had a chance to speak to her for Eurosport. She's not even playing the tournament. So what was she doing there?
I'm here actually for a completely different reason than a French Open. I was here at my best friend's wedding, and I just wanted to come and say hello to a few of my friends and just see everyone. And so I don't have to say so many hellos at Wimbledon. But it's been great. It's such a relaxed atmosphere for me. My coach came and he wanted me to train, so I'm still training a little bit, but it's just easier atmosphere. I don't have to book a practice court or anything like this, but it's good to be back.
You've obviously been away from the sport for a wonderfully happy reason, the birth of your first son, Leo. Talk me through what the last year of your life has been for you. Lots of players talk about having a completely different perspective on their tennis careers as a result of that experience. Has that been the case for you?
Definitely, and I didn't realize the perspective part before, but when it happened to me, I really start to understand it more and connect, and it's definitely the best thing that ever happened to me. And for me, being able to still do what I love is to play tennis with my son, you know, traveling, it's something really exciting. And when I go on the court, I definitely have a different emotions. It's more fun. There's a good balance between my life and my work. So I'm really happy.
You've obviously been working incredibly hard in Minsk. You look in incredible shape. When you come here, when you see the door, when you see how open it is, I know you're making your comeback on the grass. Is there any part of you that thinks, maybe I could have had a chance here if I'd come back a bit sooner?
I don't think about it that way. Do I think that I have a chance? I think so. I think I could play just fine, but I wanted to be mentally ready to go out there and grind, you know, and be in the routine. So for me right now, I think already being in Wimbledon, it's before than I wanted to. So I felt ready, but I didn't want to rush it.
Now, I know you're not sticking around in Paris for too long, but when you go back home, will you be tuning into all the matches? Will you be watching closely?
I'll watch a little bit. I'm so busy usually when I'm home that I don't have that much time to. And with me training, preparing for grass season, I think I should focus on that for now.
Well, very best of luck. We can't wait to see you back on the tour, and thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So there's Catherine talking to Victoria Azarenka. Fabulous to have her back in the sport. And you know, she just seems ready. She seems ready to return so quickly. I'm really surprised that she's able to, that she wants to. But, you know, wonderful to have her back. She sounds in great form. And you were saying on the show a couple of days ago that she looks in great shape too. So hopefully it's a successful comeback for her. Now, tomorrow, the defending champion Novak Djokovic on Wednesday will be back on court in his second round match against Joao Sousa on the Suzanne Longlong court. His coaching combination with Andre Agassi, of course, is still pretty much the talk of the town. And we wanted to know what Mats Wilander thought about it when he first heard. So Catherine caught up with him and asked Mats Wilander what he first thought when he heard about the coaching relationship between Andre Agassi and Novak Djokovic.
I think disbelief, because we haven't seen Andre Agassi around the professional circuit for so long. He doesn't come to the Grand Slams very often, and I'm not sure. I can't imagine he wants to travel the length of time that you have to make it a successful relationship. But now that he's there, it makes a lot of sense.
And I know you watched Djokovic's opening match yesterday against Marcel Granollers. First of all, what did you make of his performance?
I thought he played well. I mean, Granollers is a tough opponent. He makes you play a lot of different shots, and he tries extremely hard. I think it was interesting to see how Djokovic was going to react to being the defending champion. I thought that he looked really relaxed. I thought that the crowd was really into it, and they gave him nearly a standing ovation afterwards. And I think that they are really in love with Novak Djokovic, and he gives them so much back these days.
And in terms of what Agassi is bringing to his game, is it too early yet to tell? Did you see any differences either to him mentally or technically in what he was doing out there?
Not technically, for sure. I think mentally he was very relaxed, and it looked like he was having fun, more fun than I've seen him have during the last couple of months. And I think what Agassi is going to bring is it's the bigger picture. And I think all these super coaches, they're not really interested. Of course, the end result, they're interested in winning Grand Slams or whatever, number one in the world. But it's the bigger picture, and I think the bigger picture means that you show up and you play the guy who's across the net, and you do that as well as you can. Whether you're playing good or bad, it doesn't really matter. And I think Andy Murray, I think Novak Djokovic, maybe after a while they get caught up in trying to be the best player all the time, and compare that to Federer and Nadal, who I think just play their opponent. And I think Agassi can really bring that. I think Ivan Lendl brings that to Murray. I think Boris Becker brought that to Novak Djokovic. And then when you do that, you have great results.
You talked about the fun factor. Novak talked about the fact that Agassi was his childhood hero growing up. Do you think there's an element of Novak wanting to show off to Agassi on the court there? He's sort of peacocking, trying to impress him.
Absolutely. I mean, I think all these players, they wanted. There's nothing. I can't imagine being anything better than winning a match and then going into the locker room and then having a chat to Andre Agassi, who's either going to take you down completely on the ground and say, yeah, well, hold on, you did this wrong, or this well. There's so much respect from these Federer, Nadal, Murray and Djokovic for us older players, actually, which we are, I think we're all surprised in a way, but they've grown up watching guys on TV Agassi played a similar game to Novak Djokovic, and I think that as well would make a difference.
And in terms of what you think Agassi will be like as a coach, what kind of approach you think he'll take? We don't feel like we know Agassi that well these days. We've barely seen that much of him. Can you give us a bit of an insight into how you expect him to be in those locker room scenarios?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know Andre that well, but I've seen the transformation. I played him when he was really young, and he was basically just a ball striker. He was a showman, and he was having fun. But when you read his book, maybe he wasn't having fun. But image is everything was sort of the slogan. Then he changed, and then suddenly he started playing tennis, and ball striking wasn't as important. Maybe with the help of Brad Gilbert. And I think that Agassi is a very deep guy. He's very philosophical. Boris Becker is very philosophical, as you know. So, and I think Novak Djokovic is very philosophical. So I would think they talk about tennis a lot. I think they talk about tactics, how to behave, not necessarily technique. And I think they talk about what happens off the court a lot.
And how do you think Agassi will get along with, of course, the other member of Djokovic's coaching team, Pepe Imaz, his sort of spiritual peace and love coach? How do you think that's going to work?
Agassi is pretty spiritual, I think. I mean, when you hear his speeches and his farewell speech at the US Open, he was in tears, the crowd was in tears, and I think just the fact that he's been touched with so many kids through his foundation and through the schools that he's building for these underprivileged kids, I think that he's in touch with, again, the bigger picture and reality. I think that he fits in with the love and joy and happiness Tennis Academy as well.
And just finally, Mats, in terms of Djokovic's chances here of defending his title, would you put him as the second favourite behind Nadal?
I would put him as the second favourite together with Stan Wawrinka. I think that Novak Djokovic mentally is there. I think he's ready. I think he's played well enough. I question physically if he can last, because he has played a lot of tennis. He hasn't necessarily won a lot of matches, but when you're on the road, it's really difficult to get stronger. And when you watch Nadal, that's what he did last year. He got stronger, he moves better. And I think Djokovic sometimes looked like he's a little weaker than he used to be. Nearly looks like he stumbles sometimes and he sort of leans over. So I'm not sure physically that he can handle it.
Fascinating, Jordi. Fascinating to get your opinions, Mats. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking. And I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So there's Catherine talking to the great Mats Wilander on Eurosport. He's on their coverage throughout the tournament and always worth listening to as far as I'm concerned, Catherine. And isn't it interesting to get the insight and to hear the enthusiasm of greats like Wilander talking about another super coach back in the game?
Oh, I mean, I could have carried on with that interview all day. The well is so deep in terms of Mats Wilander's insights into these things. And as I said to him in that interview, I don't know Andre Agassi at all. Not many of us do, really, because he has been so absent from tennis for the past few years. And I would love to be a fly on the wall in those locker room conversations that he's now having with Novak Djokovic. And I think speaking to Mats Wilander about what that's like, or that's likely to be like, is probably as close to being a fly on the wall as I'm ever going to get. So I felt hugely lucky to be able to get those thoughts. And I could have carried on all day, but I had to run to, I think what I had to run to was running down to the flash position to be ready to potentially interview Joe Konta after a quick straight sets win, and that ended up just not happening. It's been all sorts of false starts and wild goose chases and all sorts of things happening on day three of Roland Garros, David. It's been very interesting.
It has, as always. Now, day four, Thursday, in fact, of course. I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore. Venus Williams will start play on Philippe Chatrier court. She's up against Karumi Nara. Then it's Garbiñe Muguruza against Annette Kontaveit, a match I think could be really good because Kontaveit is a fine up-and-coming player from... Is it Estonia? Robin Haase is up against Rafael Nadal. We've got Luca Puy against Thomas Bellucci. There's some other great matches all around the grounds. Petra Kvitova's comeback continues against Bethany Matek-Sands. There's Grigor Dimitrov against Tommy Robredo. I think that could be a good match. Robredo beat Dimitrov a few weeks back in Marrakesh. But I've got a feeling that Dimitrov is not too far away, actually, from putting it all together. When have I ever said that before?
Yeah, that's certainly like a broken record. Incidentally, his first round win a couple of days ago, in which he was very impressive, I might add, that was his first win here since 2013. Can you believe that? When I saw that, I couldn't believe it. And only his second ever win. I mean, nuts. He should have been in multiple quarterfinals here, probably a semi. He's perfectly happy on clay. I don't think he'd say it's his best surface, but he's perfectly happy. He slides, he moves well, he can adapt his game to it. I couldn't believe that stat. And yeah, I think he could be challenged tomorrow, but I was impressed enough to think that he will have what it takes against Robredo.
Maybe this is the year. Cici Bellis takes on Kiki Bertens. That'll be a good one. And how about this one? Ivo Karlovic against Horacio Zaballos. Now, they faced each other in Melbourne a few months ago. It ended 22-20 in the fifth and deciding set to Ivo Karlovic. So there we are. Let's see if we can get another replay.
Just a standard Ivo match.
Yep, standard Evo match. And finally, just a quick note, Aliash Bedonay is up against Yuri Vesely. Now, another good win in the first round for Bedonay, but he's been in the headlines again, hasn't he? And for me, a slightly uncomfortable interview. I find myself a little bit bamboozled by Aliash Bedonay just at the moment. I don't understand where he's going with his whole who he wants to play for, because now after all the upset about not being able to play for Great Britain and being absolutely devastated, now he's talking as if maybe he might fancy playing Olympics for Slovenia.
Yeah. Now, look, I'm by no means defending what Aliash Bedonay said yesterday, but I do just want to say, in his sort of weak defence, some mitigation, those words were slightly put in his mouth in the press conference yesterday. He was specifically asked about the Olympics and whether that was a particular desire and priority with him. He was sort of led down that path with saying, you know, sort of, yes, I would consider playing for... He was basically saying, yes, I would love to play the Olympics, and not ruling out, if you like, the possibility of doing so for Slovenia if that were the only route. Now, look, he still didn't deny it, and he still completely allowed himself to be led down that path, and no comments were misreported. I'm just saying sometimes context is important, and he didn't just sit down and say, yeah, I'm thinking of playing for Slovenia again, and I don't really care about my British nationality before, and all I want to do is be able to play Davis Cup in the Olympics, and if I have to go to Slovenia for that, then so be it. It wasn't like that, but it was pretty silly, really, what he said. Look, I like Aliash Bednar. It's difficult not to. I think he's a nice, sweet guy. I think he genuinely has wanted to play Davis Cup and represent Great Britain. I just think now he's a little bit confused by it all, confused by what he wants. I think it's all been such a long, arduous journey for him, and he's invested so much of his happiness in it. I think he's just confused and a bit lost about it all, and he's saying things without thinking them through or realising the consequences. You know, when my on-court post-match interview with him yesterday after a fantastic victory over Ryan Harrison, I asked him, you know, what the turnaround was between the second set, which he won really convincingly, and the third set, which he lost. And he said, oh, I thought Ryan Harrison was tanking in that second set. And he said the same to Russell Fuller in his BBC interview. And I just thought, wow, that's quite a heavy accusation to be making, Aliash. You know, perhaps not the best advised comment. But, yeah, I just think he doesn't necessarily think things through brilliantly or understand what the consequences might be. I think he means well. I do. I just think he seems a bit lost about the whole issue of his nationality and representation at the moment, and I don't know what to make of it at all.
Slightly refreshing to hear somebody be quite as candid as that and as much of an open book. But anyway, I know exactly what you mean. Catherine, it's late in the evening now in Paris. I think it's time you went and got some sleep, isn't it?
Some steak frites and then some sleep.
Yeah, okay, fine. Steak frites. Oh, yeah, I'm going to have some of that as well. Anyway, Catherine, lovely to talk to you. Go and get some rest. Be back at it tomorrow on Eurosport. You'll be able to hear all and watch all of their coverage, of course, all of day four of the French Open at Roland Garros. The same.
Can
in the
I just say
you
one
can
last thing, David?
Yeah, on
one
on
last
go
thing.
On.
I know we don't really do shout outs because it's, you know, we're just not that kind of vibe, are we? But I do have to say a very quick hello to some tennis podcast listeners that I have bumped into around the grounds today and have said lovely, kind things. And it's just, sometimes I still can't believe that people actually listen. I find it very odd when real life human beings stand in front of me and say, I listen to your podcast. I still find that odd and very, very touching. So I must say hello to Andy Furness, who works from Hawkeye, who says he listens to everything, and to Ian and Catherine, who live in Jersey and listen to all the podcasts and have come over here to the French Open from Jersey and do so every year because they love tennis so much. And I think that's great.
It is. So let me get this right. People are actually listening to this.
Yeah, I know. Scarcely credible, isn't it? Probably fewer once they read that you're on this one.
Oh, thanks a bunch. This is delightful. Catherine Whittaker, I'll let that go. Given that it's late, I'll assume it's just because of tiredness that you're insulting me. And, yeah, do check out Simon Briggs' articles in The Telegraph, of course. Watch Catherine on Eurosport tomorrow. And we'll be back with you with another tennis podcast just as soon as we can. There you go.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.